Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Nature Mystic with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy encore presentations of topics covered by Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister Selena Fox from her previous podcasts, Circle Craft Studies, Nature Folk. Tonight's encore presentation is from Nature Magic with Selena Fox from 2016, where Selena welcomed guests Raven Grimasi and Stephanie Taylor as they discussed legends, traditions, and the magic of La Befana, an Italian celebration celebrated on January 5th, Epiphany Eve.
Welcome to Nature Magic. This is Selena Fox, and tonight we celebrate Befana Night. Befana, La Befana, has her roots into the ancient past. Some know her as the end of Yuletide crone. Some know her as the Christmas witch. Some know her as an old goddess that has managed to continue to be in the here and now by morphing and changing and adapting. And her roots go back to old Italy. And it seemed it would be a great thing to celebrate her tonight, to bring on two friends that know about Italian witches, because they are. And I want to introduce Raven Grimasi and Stephanie Taylor. Welcome to Befana Night on Nature Magic.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Hello, good evening, and thank you, Selena, for having us on.
Great to connect with you both. While I don't have strong Italian roots in my own heritage, I've always enjoyed the lore, the legends, the pagan roots, the symbols of Befana. So as part of my own personal Yuletide celebrations, as well as Yuletide celebrations I facilitate with others, she has been a beloved Yuletide character. I know from my own explorations of her that she has complicated origins and has some mystery about her. Some say that she goes back to the ancient Romans. Some say before that. Some say she is a vestige of a crone priestess that did auguries at the end of the Saturnalia, the ancient Roman winter solstice celebration that went on for multiple days and nights. Certainly tonight, in Italy and other parts of the world, many people are calling her name and giving her treats. Now, unlike Santa, who does the cookies and milk offerings and prefers that, this is a wine-drinking Yuletide gift bringer, and red wine is one of the traditional offerings for her. And I'd like to begin our time of honoring her and just celebrating Befana, inviting her to come and be with us. And I have an altar set up to her in the room where I am doing this podcast, and I invite her to take a sip of that red wine that I have on the altar. Well, Bufano, we greet you, we honor you, we welcome you here. Raven and Stephanie, why don't you share some of your own understandings and experiences with La Bufana?
Yeah, we'd be happy to. I think, though, it might be kind of fun to just start off with something that Stephanie and I experienced as we were driving around the street corner from our house. Let me have Stephanie tell you about that, and then we can go into the lore and stuff of Bufana.
Yes, it's the spirit of Bufana is alive and well. We live here in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I don't know if people have seen on Facebook, there was a picture of a statue that Raven posted that we have of Bufana, where she looks like she's very peasanty. She has on a headscarf, and she has peasant clothes on, and she's holding a basket and a broom, and her basket is full of the goodies. Well, yesterday we were leaving the house to go somewhere. Apparition of Bufana. There she was, with the same coloration as the statue, the kerchief on her head, the basket around her arm, her little boots on with a little peasant skirt and a shawl. And I just told Raven, I said, "Oh my gosh, there's Bufana! She's down there on the street corner."
And it looked so much like her that instead of turning the direction we were going to go, I said, "No, go over there. I want to see her." So we actually made a right turn instead of the left we needed to do and drove by her. And I swear that was central casting for Bufana. And so we felt very blessed that we got to see that.
Oh, how wonderful.
It was amazing, especially so close to Bufana's day.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, to understand about Bufana is, like most folkloric characters, whether it be, Robin Hood or whoever, they, through the centuries, they take on more stories that weren't there originally. They take on characteristics that may not have been part of the original. And that's the beauty of a growing folkloric tradition. It adds things that people feel and maybe even borrow from other elements that enhance that. So that's why it's kind of complicated when you look at Bufana today as opposed to, centuries back and even further. And what I like to do with all my research is I like to do what I call reverse engineering. Whenever I look at some theme, character, or even deity, I like to start working backwards and seeing how that present image got formed. And so Bufana, fits that because she does have very ancient origins. There was a team of married couple, actually, who are anthropologists in Italy, and they wrote a book called The House Without a Door. And it's all about the origins of Bufana from prehistoric times on up into modern times. They trace her from being an original goddess figure up to becoming more of a folkloric character, a witch, a fairy, a goddess, all these different things get woven in. It's fascinating. Well, when you look at her, you can see the really strong ties to ritual, especially associated with the land. One of the things that they did with Bufana, and they still do, they do these bonfires, and in the bonfires they put certain ingredients, among which is usually acorns or some type of a nut that will explode when it gets heated. And they toss that in there, and as these things explode, the augurs sit and they do divination based upon when these things pop and where the sparks go. They may even start asking questions for the future. And if a nut explodes at that time, they read the answer. Well, this is very, very old pagan ritual stuff, so we can see some very rooted things. We do have modern stuff as well, though, the idea of coming to children, much like a Santa Claus figure, that's a newer thing that's probably only a couple centuries old.
And certainly many people have made this part of their Yuletide celebration, whether they call it winter solstice or Christmas or Epiphany or Epiphany Eve, which technically is the name for tonight, at least in the Western Christian branch of Christianity. It's really interesting how she's had staying power and has morphed and changed and has continued to be revered. Every year I take a look at some of her manifestations, not only in printed page, but in cyberspace. And earlier today, I watched one of the versions of the Bafana story at Epcot that was on YouTube, and they had a Bafana figure dressed up as Bafana and telling the tale. And certainly there were many things woven into that that were variants on the Christianized version of her lore.
Right.
I do think that her roots really hearken to antiquity, not only in Italy, but really is deep within human consciousness.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's this crone aspect to her, but there's also this mother aspect to her as well.
Yeah, she is multifaceted, and you know, she is a figure that is widespread. You know, cultures name them differently. You know, the Germanic people have a similar figure. You know, I mean, these ideas about Bafana, she's almost universal. But the fact that she's survived as a witch figure in Italy, you know, through the days of the persecution into the modern times, I think is one of the most astonishing things that we have about her, that they were still having this witch figure come into the house and be a gift giver. You know, that just seems so contrary to the way the church painted witches, you know, through the centuries. And so it's kind of fascinating. Of course, they did alter it. They made the Epiphany story, Christianized Bafana, by depicting her as a woman who was living in a cabin. And one day the three wise men were journeying to find the baby Jesus, and they stopped at her house, and they invited her to come with them. And she said she was too busy with chores, so they left her there, and she thought better of it afterwards and tried to catch up with them, but she couldn't find them. So now she's, in the Christian tale, she's sort of doomed or assigned, however you want to spin the story, to hunt for the baby Jesus. And so she enters houses looking for the baby still. And this is why in Christian lore, she comes to the house and gifts children, because one of them might be the baby Jesus that she missed. You know, it's a weird way in which she can rewire things, but that's kind of the modern view now of Bafana in most homes in Italy. This is the woman that was didn't go see the baby Jesus, you know. And the different thing about her than the Santa Claus idea is she is actually still associated with the hearth. But in the case of Bafana, this is about ancestral connection. You know, it's not about access into a house like Santa. the hearth is the symbol of the family itself. Families gathered around the hearth. They warmed themselves. They cooked. They told family stories. They reunited and kept the old stories alive by the hearthside. So she comes through this portal, which is the ancestral portal, the hearth, and stockings are hung on the mantle. And these stockings are woven, and they're symbols of fate. They're the fate weavers that she represents. And so offerings are put in there to her, often fruit, nuts, this type of thing. And in modern days, she comes, and the children, I know we did as kids, you had a stocking hung on the end of your bed. And little treats, and usually a toy would be put in there, and the idea was that Bafana had left that. Now, in modern times, a lot of kids are afraid of the Bafana figure, you know, because it's a witch and all the things that society has taught them, you know, negatively about witches. So even though they want the treats and the little toy, you know, they're really afraid and they go to bed and try to get to sleep quickly so they don't see her. So you can see kind of the way this was played. You know, it's a little spin on Santa, sort of. You know, go to bed early, get the kids out of the way, you know. And, you know what I mean? And so it's kind of funny how this all worked out. But she is actually has so much deeper connections. Now, she is a shapeshifter. So in a lot of the tales, she not only can come down the chimney, but if you don't have a chimney, she comes through the keyhole, which is very symbolic of key bearers and portals. And sometimes she comes under the door, which is interesting because that's the liminal in-between place in magic. So if you really look at the look beneath the surface of Bafana, you see this figure that comes through the ancestral portal of the hearth, or through the keyhole, which is the Hecate, other world connection, or under the door, which is the liminal magical place. So she's so steeped in ancient lore and magic, you know, that is probably what kept her alive, although they didn't realize what it was that was keeping her within the family traditions of Christians at the time.
Yeah, as I've been looking into her, Lauren, each year at this time, I endeavor to read another source, look at some more images. She has a lot of different depictions. And mm-hmm. there's been various poems and songs that are about her. An English translation of one, "The Bafana comes by night with her shoes all tattered and torn. She comes dressed in the Roman way. Long live the Bafana." Well, that's clearly celebrating her and some of her roots. I do find it interesting. Some of her depictions have her with a patched skirt, or her shawl may have some patches in it. There's this kind of rags and tattered dimension. Okay. Sometimes she carries the gifts in a basket. Sometimes it's a burlap bag. And what you mentioned before, the peasant dimension,
yeah,
often is depicted. As you think back to your childhood growing up, where you were, La Bafana, that was very much part of your upbringing. Did she have a particular form that was described or shown to you? Were there people that would dress up and be present, such as what happens in some places in Europe with whether it be St. Nicholas and Black Pete or some form of Father Christmas or Pierre Noel or whatever. I'm wondering if you could share some of your early childhood encounters with the Bafana.
Yeah, sure. We didn't, you know, being Italian-American, my mother was born and raised in Italy, but I was the first generation born here. So we mixed traditions in our household. My dad was German and Scot, and my mother was pure Italian. So we had a mixture of things we did. So there really wasn't any large group of family over here where someone would dress like Bafana. But the Bafana that I was taught about was the peasant witch, and with a multicolored peasant dress. And the multicolors came from the different patches that were put on this dress. So she was kind of the poor person's connection to something magical, which I kind of like that idea, you know, because it wasn't about the nobility and their privilege in society. This was somebody who helped the poor. This was somebody who took care of those who lacked. And I kind of like that image, you know, of the witch as the caretaker and overseer of the downtrodden, sort of, you know, almost like a Robin Hood kind of character. She was always described as being very old, either carried a cane or a broom, and usually had a basket. That was typical of the imagery that I was taught. And, you know, we would be put to bed early. We would have a little, you know, little stocking pinned usually to the end of the bed, and then you'd wake up in the morning and there would be different things in there. And then they had this one thing that still shows up in with children in Bafana's day, is the carbone, which is these little round licorice candies that look like charcoal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they put those in there, too. So you always get a few carbone for, you know, because you weren't perfect. So it's just a reminder, you know. So that still is, from what I understand, still happens where the children will be given at least a couple of these little licorice coal things. And we know that an American thing, with, you know, with Santa, it's the charcoal, you know, kind of thing. So this seems to have overlapped. Now, we do know that after World War II, that a lot of American customs leaked into Italy because of the American occupation over there. So, you know, it's hard to say who took what from who, but we do see a cross connection there. And one thing that I did for my initiates, because of my love for the Bafana tradition, when my initiates started having children, I played Bafana by going to their house. But Stephanie and I would actually go, and what we would do is, they didn't know we were coming. We would go and we would set little presents on the porch,
right.
And we'd put a candle there and a broomstick, and we'd ring the doorbell and run and hide and watch them come out. And the little kids would come out and they would see the broom. And you could hear the little, you know, little girl, little boy going, Bafana, you know.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And they would get the gifts and, you know, it was
like
kind of.
Little charms, and we would put fava beans and I think acorns and, you know, little silver charms in it for them. And probably a little piece of jewelry that was significant of some sort. But it was so much fun to deliver those and for them to receive. It was just tickled us to death.
Yeah, so, you know, all in all, when you look at all the different things that we did, I think, as family, you know, that was probably the simpler of all the arrangements. I was just thinking about this the other day, because I'm thinking about writing my memoirs, so I was thinking back, and I remember when I was 4 or 5 years old, I had a dream in which I heard someone in the closet, and I still remember this dream. And I got up and I opened the closet, and there was this old woman dressed very much like a Bafana figure. I don't think I really knew what Bafana was at that time, or at least not an image of her. And but this old woman was in there and dressed just like Bafana, and she smiled at me and she waved her fingers like, you know, come with me, you know. And it felt like a connection that was supposed to be made, but I was a little bit nervous. And I sort of backed away, and she smiled and nodded like, you know, that's okay, you know, we'll meet again. And I went, you know, then I ran into my parents' room in the dream, but then I woke up. And so I kind of feel that was maybe the something rising in the blood memory, you know, kind of as I was growing older. But that was kind of a nice connection, which I still associate with the onset of entering into the Bafana traditions that my mother had brought over.
That's really wonderful. Well, one of the things I've been intrigued with is I have deepened my understanding of different ways that solstice is kept. Is there's some patterns in terms of Yuletide figures, and in particular, some of the Yuletide characters that are female. Hulda or Hola, Frau Hola from Germany. Mm. In some parts of Europe has another name, Berkta or Perkta, who tends to be more fierce.
Right.
In Russia, Babushka has some of the same Christianized Epiphany tales told about her that you describe with La Bafana.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that seems to be a theme, not only with these Yuletide divine female gift bringers, but male characters as well, the divine male gift bringers.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is there a children's piece that continues to be part of practice, but what I would call the corrective feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Mention the punisher and the rewarder.
Sure.
That sometimes you get the figures and there are two figures, and one rewards those who behave well and the other punishes. But sometimes mm-hmm. they're combined in one person. And with Bafana, she often takes that naughty and nice dispenser of rewards and punishments herself,
right,
rather than has an assistant. Well, same with Hola or Hoda and Perkta and Berkta. And I'm wondering, as you've been, you know, looking at this lore, what you can comment on this. I mean, sometimes you mentioned there's even fear about seeing the Bafana
yep.
in more recent times, right? And
right.
And yet there's also delight. So there's this real mixture of both joy as well as this shadowy side that's more creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And what we see in the Bafana figure with the carbone, with the candy coal, is a domesticated remnant of the fearful aspect, the punisher. You know, we knew that Bafana was someone you didn't mess with, but we weren't given a lot of details about why not. But it was strongly implied, you know, she was not this kind, necessarily strictly a kind old, you know, loving woman or fairy spirit that came. There were reasons to be cautious because she was very much like nature. You know, nature is not really, you know, good or bad. Nature is what it is in the moment in which you're experiencing it. And there are things you can do to make that experience better. And there's things you can do that will make that experience so much worse. And I think that that's kind of the way that they saw Bafana long before the domestication of her. Was that she was a gift giver, but like you said, she had a side to her that if you were not in accord, if you were not in alignment with the force of power that she brought, it could be a negative experience. But I don't believe that the idea was for her to bring negativity, but simply to restore balance. You know, this
that's,
is a lot of what the old
point.
Gods are about. When one thing moves to correct another. And if you're caught in the middle, it can seem to you a negative experience, although that wasn't necessarily the intent. The intent was to restore balance. So I think that that's kind of a thing about Bafana, that, yes, she is indeed nature, and nature can be, can, you know, I always say a storm can much needed water for crops, or it can destroy your crops with a flood. It's not good or bad in either case. It's just nature at that time and how you are prepared to deal with it.
Yeah, certainly some of the things that I've seen in the lore of the Yuletide gift bringers has been the tradition of leaving offerings and
right.
when to leave the offerings. And in the case of Hola, Hoda, Berkta, and Perkta, some traditions have it on Solstice Eve, and some have it Christmas Eve, and some have it Epiphany Eve.
Right, right.
And one of the traditions with Hola is to put the offerings on a high place, like a rooftop. And and sometimes it's a matter of what is locally available and traditional, and sometimes it happens to be really a individual choice. So, but with Bafana, most of the offering traditions that I've encountered has her connected with the vine, with red wine. And I think that harkens to some of her origins amongst the ancient Romans. And I'm wondering your thoughts about, you know, offerings and the roots with ancient Roman religion.
It's the Strenia or Strenua. A goddess associated in Roman times with gift-giving at different points, and people would bring fruit offerings, even to friends. You'd go visit a friend, you would bring, you know, a drink, wine or whatever it is you had, and this fruit. And fruit is still a offering to Bafana. In modern times, these offerings are typically left at the hearth if you have them, because the offering is not only to her, it's a meal between the living and the dead, between the two generations who meet at the hearth, the ancestral memory. So it's kind of a food offering to the other world as well as to Bafana, who kind of crosses those worlds, so you have that. And then also nuts of various kinds are also very, very common. Now, when people don't have a hearth, what I've seen and been taught and researched is that often they will put three candles, either in a triangle shape, or they'll put them on a log, and typically birch, because birch is associated with the dead. And so you'll see that where the offerings will be left or long, you know, around something like that to represent still the ancestral connection. And to the Romans, you know, it was very much about ancestral veneration and family ties. So I think that this idea of the gift giver, you know, if it doesn't stem from the Roman traditions, you know, attached to Bafana, it may be the remnant of something that was much earlier. But a lot of people do point to the Roman Strinia goddess of the, you know, of that time period that we're looking at. But I do believe she was moved to match up with Epiphany. When you look at some of the old rituals about Bafana, she seems to belong actually closer to Yule.
Yeah.
And why I say that is because she is one of these very old folkloric figures that is either burned in effigy or a pyre is burned in her stead. And that is reminiscent of the old year passing away, which again shows her destruction power. She can destroy the previous year, turn it to ash, and from that ash a new year can grow. So I see her probably in earlier times really a wintertide figure, and I think that the Christians just sort of scooted her, you know, over to this Epiphany to kind of tie her in with a Jesus and all that. You know, just like the Christians did with Christmas itself, you know, moving the Yuletide winter time from the 21st over to the 25th. You know, they were very good at that. It always reminds me of the old shell game, the three walnuts with the pea underneath, you know. You just scoot them around and try to, you know, confuse people. And I think that that's what we see in some of these old traditions that were once purely pagan were moved and put into position so that they could troweled into Christian themes.
Yeah, well, she certainly got some of her symbology and lore recycled and a makeover. And what I find is really interesting now, many people who encounter her and traditions are delving deeper again and recognizing the pagan origins and making them more visible. And, you know, part of celebrating tonight is to also celebrate her across time and to really look at ways not only she's been connected with in the past,
mm-hmm.
but how people may be celebrating her not only now, but in the future. I think it's really wonderful that she continues to be honored and invoked by various people in various ways. For myself, I have my own personal connections with her. I have some Bafana figurines that
mm-hmm.
I have out on Bafana night. I have three candles lit in this room, and I have an offering of some red wine for her and a little bit of food from the night's meal. So I connect with her symbolically, but I also connect with her by talking about her with others and
right.
by looking at some of the writings and some of the images of her that have come from the past and what people are doing in the present. I'm wondering if you can share, I guess, some ideas for people that might want to observe Bafana Night tonight in some way, in addition
yeah,
to listening
first
to our
like
podcast.
First, I'd like to quickly mention the images that you were talking about, because there are some delightful ones from the 1800s. I have a couple of them on my website, stregeria.com, in the Bafana article, which shows her as a sitting in the midst of a harvest, which is where she could be associated with plant life and the vines and the wine and all this type of thing, the celebratory issues of the harvest season. So these are some images to look at that are old and still show a lot of paganism behind them. You know, if you Google Bafana now, you'll get such a variety of things, including the stereotype, you know, elder haggish witch. So she's got so much rich imagery. But I think that, you know, fire is very important in connection with Bafana, whether it's a candle or whether the fireplace is going. This is the living flame, and the living flame has always been about sacredness, whether it's a candle lit in a temple, fire in a sacred grove, whatever it might be. So I think lighting a candle or your fireplace on the eve, on Bafana's night, is an excellent thing to do. The offerings, like you said, with the wine, I would also put some fruit or nuts out, and I would taste all these things and talk about the covenant of joining yourself, past, present, and future, honoring the past by remembering all the things that Bafana represents, honoring the present by having a communal meal with her, and then honoring the future by devoting yourself to keeping these traditions and passing them on. When we speak of Bafana, we are using the sacred breath of our ancestors. When we speak of things that came before us, when we remember traditions or we remember people, we remember them by speaking and the breath goes out. And so I always say at the end, give thanks to Bafana, tell her that you want to continue her story for others, and then blow that candle out with your breath, because the breath is moving into the future. Because as we speak of the past, we speak in the present, but our breath goes forward. So I think these are key things you can incorporate in tonight into honoring and celebrating this sacred night.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Certainly one of the things that I do, not only on Bafana night, but in the Yuletide, which lasts for days and nights. I actually celebrate for several weeks because I have multi-ethnic background, so I will connect with my Lucia Swedish Yuletide.
Oh, yeah.
On the 13th of December, and then I also will connect with my Germanic with Hola and Holda and Mother's Night on Solstice Eve, as well as what many people call Christmas Eve here in the Northern Hemisphere. And I know there's a bit of Italian in me way back in time, so I actually see my Bafana night celebration is kind of the culmination of the Yuletide as I go into the Epiphany time. And it's just really wonderful to invoke her, to do some ritual. And I pay attention to my dreams and flashes of inspiration that happen. And I really liked how we started out with the story, and as you and Stephanie talking about actually having a manifestation of Bafana right in your neighborhood. I mean, how magic.
That was awesome. It was unbelievable because I didn't know what Stephanie was looking at. And I, the look on her face, I was looking at her like, what? And she goes, Bafana. And she points. And I look over and there's Bafana. You know, I'm like, what? It was amazing. It was synchronistic.
Well, and the thing about it was that you know, she really wasn't in my conscious awareness at the time, but when I saw that, it was just so automatically, boom, it was there. You know, we've had things like that happen to us before where we've had older women show up
in need
in our lives, like at our store or on the street. And Raven was taught a very big lesson about never ignore them.
Yeah, do you have a time for a short story?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, we have to tell you this story because it's a trip. I was taking my mother to her doctor's appointment, and I'm driving along, and the way that California, we call them freeways, the freeway or highway goes off to the main street, there were double lanes, and so you have to get into one or the other, and I happened to be in the far one from the curbside, and there was this old woman standing there, and she was dressed in, she had a head covering like a shawl, she had like old European peasant clothing on, and she was standing there, she didn't have a sign or anything, she was standing there, and she was looking at all the people in the cars, and she looked at me, and she put her hand out, you know, with her palm up. But I was a couple of lanes over and just looked at me. And I thought at the time, God, I'd like to get over there, you know, so I could give her something. But I couldn't because of all the cars. I mean, I could have, had I pulled in and blocked the lane of traffic, I could have done that. I made the decision not to do that, and I drove off because it was just too complicated. But when I got to take my mother up to the doctor's office, I couldn't find the car keys. And I searched all over and made my way back to the car. They weren't there. I searched all over, talked to the janitor, looked in the elevators. The keys had completely disappeared. And I actually had to call and get someone to come and bring me a set of keys. And as soon as the set of keys came and were put in my hand, I immediately saw the old woman standing on the corner with her hand out. And in my mind, I heard Hecate. And that said, you denied me, I denied you.
Well, what a great story. And clearly the part of the magic of Yuletide, and you have magic throughout the year, of course, but there are these sacred times where the divine can appear in many forms and guises.
Oh, yeah.
And I think back to earlier in the show where you're talking of you dressing as the Bhavana and going out and putting the gifts out in the broom. And one of the traditions that I have encountered, including earlier today, it was actually commonplace for men to take on the Bhavana guise. And one of the articles that I saw actually had pictures in Venice of Bhavanas rowing down one of the canals, and they were all dressed as Bhavana.
Yeah.
And that kind of harkens back to some of the Saturnalia traditions of guising and role reversal, changing power dynamics. And some people tonight, they don't call it Bhavana night, they call it Twelfth Night with the 12 days of Christmas and things.
Sure.
And in colonial America, my roots go back to old Virginia, and in the colonial era, especially amongst the people who were planters and had land, they would throw big 12th night parties. This was the event more than Christmas. And I encountered earlier today, a friend of mine had written about George and Martha Washington having these great 12th night parties at Mount Vernon.
Really?
And, well, whether you call it Bhavana night or 12th night, there is kind of the magic of the unexpected.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, being out and about.
Yep. And, you know, you mentioned men in connection with that, so I think we should probably give an honorable mention to a consort that Bhavana once had called Bhavano. And Bhavano shows up... starts to disappear right around the turn of the century. He seems to completely disappear from these old traditions. But we do have old photos from the late 1800s of processions that have Bufana with Bufano. And he's a figure that he dresses, again, in peasant garb. He usually has a hooded cloak, but he has a hunchback. And often, if his hair is showing at all, you can see two horns. So he's sort of this creature of nature, a herd animal, I suppose, of some sort associated with a goddess of harvest and agriculture. So, you know, this may harken back to the days when animals were attached to plows and whatnot, you know, to plow the fertile fields. So there may be some connection there. You know, I can't say that for certain, but it does make you wonder when you see the Bufano consort. And he's usually accompanied by street minstrels, and they play typically little flutes, other instruments later on. They're dancing. They're tricksters. They tease people in the crowd. You know, so you see this element with Bufano, but unfortunately, that seems to have disappeared. You know, right around the turn of the century, from the 1800s to the 1900s.
They still have processions in Italy, Bufano?
They used to do street processions. Yeah. I don't know if they do them anymore, but I have some old photos from a tourist book that was in the early, I think it was 1930s, where this guy actually traveled all around Italy filming or taking pictures of all of the street parades and processions in all the major cities of Italy. And it was so widespread in almost every city throughout Italy, he took pictures of the Bufano street processions. And people knock on doors, they would open the doors and give the minstrels food or drink or something, you know, they would give to them. And this is also where you begin to see sometimes these songs are sung in which Bufana is called the Good Fairy. And that made me wonder about her name. You know, we have the name Bufana.
Yeah.
But I wondered, just based upon some loose ends that I saw in folklore, could it not be that her name originally was Bona Fana, the Good Fauna? Bonafana.
Yeah.
He became Bufana because that just sort of shortened the sound of it from Bonafana to Bufana, you know what I mean? So I wonder if she wasn't the Good Fauna at one time that came Bufana rather than Bonafana. That's just my own personal thing.
Well, and part of the mysteries of her, last year as part of my Bufana celebration, I looked at multiple videos, many of which were in Italian, and some were live action YouTube videos of one of these celebrations in a village. And in this one village, they had a Bufana character who came out of a window and on some kind of wire came across the street as people were all cheering, and she made her appearance and certainly looking at fireworks going off and bonfires being kindled and people having a great party. And that's been another tradition that seems to be pretty widespread in connection with her celebrations. People dancing and having fun, making merry. I don't know if there's been attempts to quiet the revelry as there have been in various places across time. Yuletide celebrations, but certainly I've encountered numerous accounts of celebrations of Bufana going into the night, and not just the kids thing, but the adults really having a good time.
Yeah, and some of this may be a comeback. I know from what my mother told me that World War II had such a horrible impact upon customs and traditions because in the rebuilding and getting life back, you know, a couple of years may have gone by before people were really, you know,
Exactly.
Doing the things they used to do celebration-wise, and some of them just never got back to it, you know. So that was an unfortunate thing. But we are seeing a revival. You know, there is definitely a pagan revival going on. And Italy is a little bit behind us. They're kind of where we were in the days of Gerald Gardner in the 60s. You know, they're coming into their own now with reclaiming things, and organizations are forming. And but they're a few years behind, I think, what the scene is here in the States, at least from what I've been told by family members that come over and people that I still know in Italy. But these revivals are very, very strong, and I think we're seeing a strong return to paganism. In fact, I do recall now that I say that I think last year or maybe the year before, the Pope gave some kind of an admonishment to people, you know, because he was concerned at what he was seeing as a return to paganism. So it must be pretty visible for the Pope to come out and say, hey, you know, knock it off, you know. basta, you know.
Well, and knowing that that's been something that has happened off and on over the years in various ways, which is a testament to the power of the fauna and the celebrations.
Right.
Well,
right. Well, you know, if you think about it, I mean, the old gods, especially the agricultural gods, are all about birth, life, death, and renewal. You know, there's no end, and if something dies, it is reborn, and so that's the pagan spirit, and I think that's why we're seeing the return.
I agree. Well, we give thanks to Bafana, and we give thanks to both of you. And for people that would like to know more of your work, I'm wondering if you can give website, Facebook pages. What are some good ways that people can follow up and make contact and learn more about the wonderful things that you do?
Oh, well, thank you for that opportunity. I'll turn you over to Stephanie. She keeps her finger on that pulse more than I do.
Well, if the world doesn't know yet, Raven and I just released this huge project that we did through Kickstarter for a DVD called Ever Ancient, Ever New, Hearth Witchcraft by the Hearthside. And it's a documentary kind of interview format. We looked at it, we modeled it after the Power of Myth interview that Bill Moyer did with Joseph Campbell. And in this context, I'm the interviewer and Raven is the interviewee, and it's a two-hour... it's a two-hour DVD where Raven talks, I ask him all kinds of questions about lore and ritual and magic and all kinds of things. So we actually just released that this week. And you can find and follow us. Our main website is www.houseofgrimassi.com. And that particular website is an umbrella for pretty much all that Raven and I do as far as our teachings and the things that are really have heart for us. We're on Facebook. Raven's on Facebook, not as Raven Grimassi. He's on there as Grimassi Raven because of the algorithm problems that Facebook seems to have. And, of course, I'm on as Stephanie Taylor. And we also, you can purchase Raven's books and other items that coincide with, again, with the things that we teach as far as the witchcraft and spirituality. We have an internet store called Raven's Loft. .biz, B-I-Z is the end extension, and there was something else too that I was just going to say. Oh dear me, we're going to be at PantheaCon this year, which
then we'll get to connect face to face. That'll be fun.
Yes, I'm really, you know, that's one of the places where we really get to see everybody, and we're really looking forward to that. You can type in Grimassi and you can probably locate us anywhere. Raven has a fantastic book coming out at the end of this month, beginning of February. We're actually going to launch it at PantheaCon, and it's called Communing with the Ancestors. I would love for him to talk a little bit about that, because during the time that he was writing this book, at nighttime, after he had been writing all day, he would come in and we would talk about what he wrote about that day. And I had some incredible dreams about my ancestors that were so potent and really gave pause for me to really think about where I was at with some of them and to try to reconnect. And this book has such dimension to it. I'm going to let Raven, I think you just have like a little bit of time to talk about it, but I think you should.
Oh, yeah, the Communing with the Ancestors is really a hands-on book. There's a lot of practical information on how to contact your ancestors, and it talks about the difference between the dead and the ancestors. And a lot of people probably don't think about distinguishing that. But I think it's going to be a very good hands-on book, and we've seen it be effective for people that have worked with the techniques for really opening up ancestor connection. And I think that is so important because the ancestors have a vested interest in the living, and they have a vested interest in what's happening to this planet because they were part of it. And their generation, they want to be remembered, and they're remembered by the living. And so we need to keep living in the world we're in. And so the ancestors' voices are getting louder and louder because they want to companion us as we turn the tide of destruction on this planet. So I think ancestral themes are really important now, and I encourage people to really work with the ancestral voices and get the guidance and support that can turn the tide.
Well, what a nice thing to have.
Are you still there, Serene? Selena?
Yeah, you know, we've had a couple adventures with Blog Talk where the sound goes off and on, and
oh.
I'm back at this point. I want to thank you both so much for being part of Nature Magic. I look forward to seeing you at PantheaCon and celebrating the book launch, and I want to wish you and everybody who has tuned in tonight a great Bafana's night, and we want to honor the ancestors in their many forms as we go into this evening. Thank you so much, and I
sure,
invite
for having us on, and buona fortuna tutte, which means good fortune for everyone.
That sounds wonderful.
We battle nobilities in advised whim. Shameless and shining, we've always asked why, but what could
has not broken us yet. Try as she might, not a drop will she get. Tyranny's tantrums have come into play, striking down witches for want of a day.
Oh no. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
To dance when there's blood on the air. The world is a dangerous place, little one, but you already know there are marvelous deeds to be done.
Wicked and strong in our shining we stand, straight backed with a drop of the future to hand. It's when we are human that you must take care. But wonders will come to you, darling, if only you dare. Oh, if only you dare. Tyranny's child has not broken us yet. Try as she might, not a drop will she get. Tyranny's flowers can't topple too soon, striking down witches for want of a spoon. Oh, no.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.